Vancast to finish up the week, and not just any Vancast, Rancer. Oh no, I feel like we should have champagne bottles at the ready here. Pop some bottles. 200! This is our 200th Vancast.
Incredible.
Well, again, there was some question about, because the first few, we always have to cover that off, right? It's 200 podcasts. I think like 194 of them were Vancasts.
The first were a few, we did a few Nuxcasts.
There were a few Nuxcasts.
Yeah, before somehow someone objected to that.
We will never forget the Nuxcast, yeah, though.
It's like,
it's a part of,
I don't know about that name. I don't know about that name. Make them change it. And then it's like, yeah, okay. Like, we'll make them change. I mean, honestly, they did us a favor considering the scrotal reaction that everyone had when we first debuted Nuxcast way back in, what was it, October of 2019? My goodness.
Yes.
It's been a long time, JPad. Like, 2 years. Like, your kids have graduated. I've lost even more hair. We've gone through a global pandemic. We've gone through a bubbled situation. The Canucks have, you know, not just returned to the playoffs, but then returned to the cellar of their own division in the time since we've been recording. It's incredible what time does. But it's been a lot of fun, man. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we've told the story before, really sort of getting down to brass tacks, if you will, on the 8-hour lunch at Browns and Abbotsford,
right,
between the morning skate and the exhibition game. Like, that seems like a lifetime ago now, and yet that was really where we kind of finalized what we wanted to do and the fact that, we were going to push on here and get this thing up and running. And then, of course, once that exhibition season was over, started on the road with the two games in Alberta and the trip to Banff. Who will ever forget Banff?
Yeah.
We'll always have Banff.
Well, I even remember at that Browns lunch taking a couple of calls, and I was calling like AHL sources and people to break down in like the post game, like what's the possibility of Vancouver coming back to Abbotsford, you know? And now that's happened. Like, that's how long ago this was. Incredible. But look, 200 episodes. You've put up with me for 200 episodes, man. That's a lot of bad takes that you've had to endure. So you have my thanks. You have my gratitude. And honestly, I've enjoyed it so much. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed interacting with our listeners, too. I mean, that's really what stirs the drink here. So thanks to them as well for also enduring my bad takes and supporting this podcast project we've been lucky enough to work on together over the course of the better part of 2 years now.
Right. Like, we cover the Canucks. It's what we do for a living. We know what the Canucks mean to so many of the fans in this market, and certainly the VIPs or the hardcores of the hardcore. And yet it's hockey. It's a game. And, you know, I think my approach to pods, so certainly with Botch 2, is you got to have some fun with it, right? Like, it's important, but it's not that important at the end of the day. And so you try to find some of the lighter moments and some of the fun things. And, you know, when I think back to 200 episodes, Tom, first of all, you've been prolific in the content that you've pumped out on the print side, but so has Harm and Wyatt too with the armies. And that's provided so much of the content for the podcast, is we have reacted to things that you've written, thoughts that you've put down in print, but also, you know, takes that these other guys have had. And then we've been able to dive down into those as well. So certainly want to mention Harm Dial and Wyatt Arndt, the Stanchion, the Stanchion, like, look, you got a Canadian team that just punched its ticket to the Stanley Cup final in overtime, not nearly as dramatically as the Canucks did 10 years ago with help from the Stanchion. But those two guys have been doing, you know, and they've been on the podcast too, but certainly just wanted to mention them. And Jeff Demet, our producer behind the scenes, hardest working man in show business.
Truly.
He's able to edit out our missteps and our flubs along the way.
He's the Arturi Lehkonen. He's the glue guy here.
It has been fun. And, you know, for me, like, I think of some of the places along the way with all the travel that we recorded. I remember early on, it was always two of us in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And
almost until the pandemic.
We had to figure out how to record remotely.
But we figured it out as a test. We almost never did it. We almost never did it until the pandemic.
My God, I'm glad we did. I'm glad we did.
Oh, no kidding. Holy cow. You insisted, yes, too. I was like, we'll always be together, JPat. And you were like, no, we have to figure this out. And then that, of course, paid off in spades come March of 2020. And honestly, I think the stretch I'm proudest of when I reflect on this is the Name the Canucks stretch, and like just going through the pandemic. Like, hockey didn't exist for like 4.5 months. And we just found a way to still do two episodes per week. And I think a lot of those episodes hold up. Like, I think we got some good guests. I think we found, like, fun topics. We went deep on, you know, things like Pettersson and Hughes's second contracts and, you know, Judd Brackett's departure. And, I mean, we just ground away and found ways to keep talking Canucks with the level of detail and minutia that I think the VIPs and our listeners expect from us. And, you know, when I think back to, like, parts of my career that I'm like, how'd that happen? Like, how'd we do that? Like, man, that was nuts. That stands out, like, right at the front of the line for me. I'm really proud. And honestly, not just proud, but I think I needed it. Like, I always looked forward to knowing in that time of, like, relative isolation that at the very least I'd have 45 minutes to chat hockey and play a game show with my good buddy J-Pat. So kept me sane too, and the listeners obviously responded to it during that stretch. But that's sort of the stretch that I feel like, you know, really typifies, like, what this pod is, which is just, you know, a couple of guys who believe that this team matters, cover it accordingly, and are always happy to talk about it at length, especially with one another.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I think back over these 2 years now, and I just think of all the places that we'd been and things that we've done, whether it was axe throwing in Nashville, we mentioned the Banff Roadie, you know, playoff baseball at Yankee Stadium, come on.
Yeah. Remember how good you were at axe throwing, by the way? And I started making fun of how, like, the ghosts of Lynn Valley, like, loggers, like, were coursing through your veins, because you were just, like, bullseyes, like, We were hanging out with that group of, like, video workers. Remember, they were like a film crew.
Roadies.
Yeah, they were roadies, and they were like, "Wow, like, do you do this like a lot?" And you're like, "No, this is my first time." But you were like crushing it. You were like a natural axe thrower.
My basement axe throwing layer that I practice daily. Out in the forest, the wilds of North Van, I just take it up into the woods and practice. So, no, I mean, so many great memories along the way. It has been a ton of fun. And also, you know, Steamworks got on board early, H&I. You talked about Gurjeet on the last podcast. It's an incredible story as well.
My favorite person, truly.
And I just want to take a moment here to recognize Portum Financial as well, because they jumped on board to support us, and it means a ton to us.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Tom, we talked about 200 shows right off the top, and I don't know if he's heard every single one of them, but he's been there pretty much the entire way with us. Farhan Lalji of TSN, loyal supporter of the podcast, a listener to the podcast. And Farhan, I'd have to do a little fact-checking here, but outside of Harmon and Dhaliwal and Wallace, you might be the most frequent guest on the VanCast as well.
Well, Wallace is the clear winner. We know that, right? And there's nothing like a good VanCast until you hear that little in the background. So, and I guess sometimes Harm does that too, right? Because he was kind of the first guy that Thomas brought along, and now Wallace is the second guy Thomas brought along. So, I'm honored to be in that rare, esteemed company.
Harm, our little puppy, who's growing up before our eyes and is becoming a ferocious reporter in all of this. Look, we'll talk some Canucks here in a sec, but the Montreal Canadiens are in the Stanley Cup final. Farhan, what do you see when you look at the roster construct of this Montreal hockey club?
Well, I think at the start of it all, Mark Bergevin wanted to create a team that was deep and had three lines. Now, they weren't necessarily three elite lines, but they were three capable lines. And, you know, you couple that with a physical defense that can move the puck and defend, or at least the top four can. We know their bottom six are a bit of a – sorry, their bottom two are a bit of a liability. And then you've got Carey Price playing at Carey Price level, right? Like, there's been ups and downs during his last couple of seasons, but he's playing as well as he's ever played at any point in his career. You've got this young guy, Cole Caulfield, that doesn't know what he doesn't know, and it all has come together and a pretty tasty stew right now, and here they are in the final.
I know we're not supposed to cheer for teams or people, but pretty hard not to want to see Alex Burrows get it right a decade after the fact and get his hands on the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I've never been a Canada's team guy, right? So deep down in my gut, I have a tough time cheering for any team that's you know, not the Canucks. Not that I cheer for the Canucks, but, you know, just in terms of wanting the other fan bases to celebrate. I was talking to Drancher the other day, and I've always said that, you know, I compare it to soccer, okay? So the England team, the England soccer team and their fans, that's like the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've never won anything ever, but they believe the game belongs to them. And then you've got the Habs and their fan base. They're like the Italians, right? So they win once in a blue moon. And when they do, they say, what do you mean? We always win. And when they don't win, it's a controversy, right? And they got screwed. So I find that, you know, like the Habs, they've been down. Now they're up again, and their fans are kind of back to that. But you're right. It's hard not to cheer for Alex Burrows. And I got along really well with Mark Bergevin as well, not only when he was here, but during the lockout back in the early 2000s, there was an IMG barnstorming tour of Europe, and I was on the tour, right? And so I think Duffy wrote about it in his book. It was Pat Brisson and JP Barry. They had arranged the trip, and a bunch of their clients went, and we did 10 European cities in 14 days, and Berge was the head coach of that team, and he was one laugh after the other. So, you know, for both of those guys, you know, I'm happy for them, but boy, I have a tough time just wanting to listen to the fan base now that they've got out of control.
Farhan, the New York Islanders are one game away from meeting the Habs in the Stanley Cup final. Do we know anything about playoff hockey? Like, I don't think I've got a single series right this whole playoffs.
Well, I mean, for you, it started poorly when Calgary didn't make it and Winnipeg won the first round,
that's
right?
That's true.
Like, that was the gut punch right there. But, I mean, you know, should we be that surprised that the Islanders are where they are, because they were here a year ago, right? And, you know, they showed us something then in terms of their ability to flip the switch and play playoff hockey. And, you know, Barry Trotz has been successful at this level. So maybe we shouldn't be that surprised. I mean, look, I still think Tampa's going to find a way, but when you get to a game seven, it really is a coin flip. And, you know, I'm curious, right? Because if the Islanders get to the final and wind up upsetting Tampa, that really does set the table for Montreal, doesn't it? I mean, just a lot of work has been done before they had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, the thing with the New York Islanders is, like, there was a 120-minute stretch where they were outscored 12-1 in the conference final, and they're 60 minutes away. This has got to be.
Well, when I look at
when I look at
you know, the Islanders in that 8-0 game, I mean, that really is the epitome of it was just one game, right? I mean, we see this. The one thing that impresses me the most, right? I've always said, and you know me, I'm a football guy, nothing elevates, no sport elevates its play like hockey does in the playoffs, right? You know, in the other sports, kind of the bad teams simply get eliminated. In hockey, it's different, right? There's just such a level of resiliency, and it's not just physical. It's not just the physical level that increases, especially when Clark Lee's the referee. It's the emotional resilience, because teams can get hammered 8-0 and they can come back the next game. Teams can give up a goal in the final minute or lose a 3-overtime game, and it's a gut punch that you think emotionally they can't recover from, and they'll look back on with such regret they recover. And you know, the Islanders were able to do that. That 8-0 game, and even the first two goals in the following game, yeah, we'll move on. Let's go. And that always impresses me about hockey.
Tom and I did a podcast on Wednesday right after Daniel and Henrik were introduced. Obviously, the press release came out Tuesday. We saw them with our own eyes via Zoom. We heard from them for the first time in a while. And I think we agreed. Like, it was a good day for the city and the organization just to hear from Daniel and Henrik again. What did you take away, Farhan? What did you hear from anything either one of them said about what's ahead for them?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is they're authentic, you know, and I think Drancher wrote about this after the fact and talked about it in the last podcast, that we're so conditioned to be cynical on what the actual agenda is and what they're actually saying, except when the Sedins say it, they actually mean it. You know, even back in the day when they would convince themselves post game that the team had played well and were close, even when they absolutely weren't, they believed it, right? They weren't lying. They weren't faking it. They truly in that moment believed it. So I think that's the best part, that it was real. And I think what I took is that they want to learn. And so what are they going to do for the Canucks right now? They're not going to do a lot. They're going to give the team credibility. They're going to give the organization a level of credibility. And players have to listen to them with a certain level of respect and admiration. because of what they did and how they did it. But they're going to learn, and that's what this is. And I hope down the road they have bigger roles in the Canuck organization, because once they've cut their teeth and know what they don't know, whereas right now they don't know what they don't know. And as Drancher said, they know enough to know that what they don't know, right? Like it's one of those things. So I think at some point, I hope they have a bigger role. I hope they learn at the pace that they're comfortable with, which will be quick, right? I mean, they're quick studies, and I think they can approach it from a myriad of different levels and make the organization stronger. It won't happen right away. Right now is about them, getting them stronger in the areas that they're not comfortable. But eventually, if the organization gives them bigger roles, it's going to pay big dividends.
Well, they're stepping in, and as Tom pointed out in his piece, they're introduced this week, but they start July 1st. Like, July is going to be a dizzying month on the hockey calendar with an expansion draft, the draft itself, free agency, buyouts, you name it. Like, what a month to jump on board. And where you say, like, you know, their roles, like, I think their role in the first month will just be sponges, but what a month. Like, there's just a ton of stuff to absorb here in their first month on the job.
Yeah, and I'm curious how much input they'll be given during that month, right? Because, you know, everybody's well aware that they're learning, right? So, you know, when Jim's about to sign a guy, you know, he might take Daniel and Henrik's opinion, but is he really going to absorb it, consider it, as opposed to simply hearing it? So, you know, I'm curious to see how that's going to impact what the Canucks' decision-making is. Because, I mean, I think we all fear, right, when it comes to free agency, you know, that's generally been an area where the Canucks have struggled in. And, you know, we heard Jim this week on local radio, and, you know, there were some things there that were said that made me hold my breath a little bit. And so I'm curious if Daniel and Henrik's opinion will allow them to pump the brakes on the way they've generally made decisions to this point.
Farhan, in particular, was it the comment about size and strength on the back end that had you holding your breath?
Well, there were two things. That was one of them, because, you know, we've seen the Eric Branson movie before. And, you know, look, my biggest criticism of Jim is he overvalues intangibles, right? So he still has an old school view of how rosters should be constructed. And it's only been this year that he's talked about three scoring lines, whereas previously it's been two scoring lines, you know, in that old school model of, you know, checking line, energy line in your bottom six. Whereas it'll be a little bit different now. And I know that Bruff asked him directly about any regret you may have with previous signings you've made. And he again talked about, you know, we wanted to bring those guys in because we had a young core and we wanted those guys to teach these players how to play the right way and how to practice properly and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Like that's a lot to be paying and a lot of term to be offering for intangible. And that's what you're looking at on the back end. I mean, they clearly overvalued with Tyler Myers. You know, there's a thought process on, you know, these guys can move the puck and these guys can be big physical. And yeah, I think both of those things. And even when he was questioned about those other players and he talked about why he brought them in, he then also again circled back and blamed everything on the flat cap, right? The flat cap cost him $2.5 million on what should have been last year's salary cap. Right. And, you know, a little, obviously more than that in the coming year, but that doesn't excuse the 20 million plus in inefficient contracts that they've got. Right. I mean, you can't attribute all of that to the flat cap. That's just not real. But, you know, it's kind of the get out of jail free card. So those two things certainly troubled me as they go into this process, because, you know, I'm like you in that don't screw up next year by making a mistake this year. And, you know, you've got a situation where, like, what should you be doing? You should be signing guys to one-year reclamation deals. But instead, I think you're going to wind up terming some guys, and it's going to cause problems a year from now.
How many pieces, in your view, does this club need to make the playoffs? I mean, we know that there's not a ton of space, but we also know that this is the Canucks. Making the playoffs is kind of everything. How much do they need, in your view, to get there with this club as it's currently built?
I don't think they need a ton to get to the playoffs. And I say that because I think 2 years ago, they overshot a little bit, like in the playoffs, right? The season probably was where they should have been. Last year, I think they underachieved. And I don't see, you know, Elias Pettersson having that year. I think he's going to be better. I think JT Miller is going to be better. I think Quinn Hughes is not going to have that difficult of a season defensively. I do think all of them can collectively be 10% better, coupled with the fact that you're going to have some struggling California teams that are going to be in the division, and that might be enough to get them in, right? With, you know, it's not going to take massive improvement to get them into the playoffs. It is going to take massive improvement to make them a legitimate contender. right? So when, mm-hmm. when you look at this, I mean, you know, they need they definitely need another top six forward, if not two. You know, they definitely need a third line center, depending on how you want to deploy JT Miller. They need at least two more legitimate defensemen, one on each side, you know, so that you're not in a position where you've got to bring Alex Sedler back at a high number and then give him matchup minutes because there's simply nobody else on the left side to do that, right? You know, there's so many things that they need in order to be a legitimate contender, whereas making the playoffs might not be a huge stretch just because, you know, I think eventually they're going to be somewhere in between where they were the last 2 years, and the division around them probably gets a little bit worse.
If we all agree that the organization is better off with the Sedins in it, and yet we're not totally clear, you know, where that final landing spot will be, their sweet spot for their input, but just having them around, what kind of impact do you think they could have on Elias Pettersson if he wanted to, you know, pick their brain or use them as a sounding board, as guys that have traveled down that path that, you know, he hopes to travel?
Well, I think the, you know, we talk about intangibles. I think they could be his sports psychologist, right? Elias Pettersson individually is not a lot like the Twins, right? I mean, just in terms of how he projects and what he prioritizes personally, right? I mean, could you see the Twins ever making the social media commitment that Pettersson has? And that's not a criticism on Pettersson for doing that, because that just is what people of his vintage do. That's reality. That's not a criticism. But, you know, just in terms of how he deals with the ebbs and flows and the ups and downs of a season, he wears it on his sleeve a lot more than the Twins ever projected they did, even if it ate them up, right? So I think they have that ability to steady the ship, to calm the waters. And I think Pettersson could use that from time to time, right? I think he feels it. I think he shows his frustration. He'll say that, you know, to the media. And maybe that's what makes him tick. Maybe that intensity is what fuels him and makes him good. But I think he could probably use a little bit of Sedin-type massaging to just maintain a level of consistency in his game, right? And I mean, look, he generally, when you look at the overall body of work at the end, the numbers always seem to look good, right, relative to others. But, you know, we do see ebb and flow to his season that we generally didn't with the Twins. And I think he could help them in that area.
Well, we can't have you on the pod without talking about Alex Sedler. You mentioned him a moment ago. Now you got the Sedins. You've got the Sedins coming back to the organization. Can you envision that they would return and somehow their recommendation would be that the organization walks away from their buddy?
Yeah, I think that'd be tough, right? And look, I think Alex Sedler is a good player. He can still be an effective NHL defenseman in the right role, right? And I do believe that the Twins would believe in him and find value. But for me, I want to see Jack Rathbone on this team next season. And if you do, I think the place for Rathbone is a third pair, ideally with a guy like Travis Hamonic, you know, babysitting him the way he attempted to do last year with Quinn Hughes. So that puts Edler into your top four. And I just don't think that's where he is at this stage of his career. And if you're Travis Green and that's the left side you're picking from, how do you not give Edler the matchup minutes? Not because, you know, he's necessarily that guy right now, but when you compare him to the other two young guys, and you've got a Quinn Hughes who, you know, struggles defensively. I mean, you know, the strategy with a guy like Hughes is you're not playing in your own end. Well, that worked 2 years ago. It didn't work last year. So, you know, I'm not sure how you manage that. I think that's a difficult situation given the way the defense is currently constructed. You know, could you make Edler your third pair guy? And now all of a sudden, you slow down Jack Rathbone's development, right? So, you know, can Edler play in this league as a third pair guy? Yes, but is that the right fit in Vancouver? I don't know. That's not a shot at the player. It's just where he's at age-wise and where the club is at in terms of its evolution on the back end. But yeah, if you're the Twins, you probably would recommend bringing him back.
I've been hearing a lot of chatter because of what Corey Perry's done for the Montreal Canadiens and what Jason Spezza, of course, did for the Toronto Maple Leafs, that like the Canucks should be targeting Jason Spezza and Corey Perry type players, especially considering their cap situation. It's a local talking point on Sports Talk Radio. In returning Edler, right, in evaluating the prospect of returning Edler, does it not work best if he's their Jason Spezza? Like, I'm beginning to be baffled by this because you're right. The fit doesn't make a ton of sense, but Edler is still good. Does it need to really be at the right price point in your view? Like a really team-friendly price point?
It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be. And I don't think it's going to be, right? I would imagine that he's still going to be in the $3 million range, and that simply shouldn't happen for this team right now. Those guys took minimum deals. You know, I talked about the 1 year reclamation deal. And for those guys, it wasn't really reclamation. It was just extending my career and squeezing out what I could. And, you know, those players played up and down the lineup. You know, Corey Perry at one point was a healthy scratch. And now, you know, he sits there in the top six when needed in Montreal. And it's effective on a short term, you know, in short term situations. Right. So I just can't see the Canucks deploying Edler that way. And if it's going to come, you know, at a $3 million deal and the Canucks can justify it by saying, we're only going to give you a 1 year deal, I still don't like it because, again, they're just not going to deploy him that way. So I don't know that there's a fit. I absolutely think he's going to be back, right? Mm-hmm. Because eventually they'll circle back on him. It's not going to be a rush decision. You know, Edler's not going to sign the first day of free agency. I'm not expecting that because I think he's going to give the Canucks every opportunity to find a way to bring him back, right? So I'm not sure it's going to turn into a Spezza Perry type of arrangement, but I do think that's the type of player the Canucks should get. And it probably speaks volumes that the Canucks simply can't get that guy, because how do you feel you're going to rebuild your career or extend your career playing here in a fourth line role, right? Like, you know, Perry went to Montreal as their 13th forward at the front end. Who's going to do that in Vancouver like that, right? It's just not like that. They're in a situation where they've got to overpay and overterm, and that's a tough place to be in. And, you know, like, take it one step further, right? You've got Travis Green, and I asked Travis this at his press conference when he signed his extension. And both Travis and Jim are in a situation where their next contract will be judged by this season, right? Because a year ago, you know, you said, okay, well, it's the pandemic. And, you know, that was the excuse ownership used to leave Travis dangling. Well, you're not going to have that excuse a year from now. So this current season and those results are going to be what both of those men are judged by for their next contract, so that they don't go into the following year in a lame duck season. So, you know, I worry about Jim making more mistakes, you know, and there's been plenty, because he's, you know, that traditional hockey guy that wants to make hockey trades and hockey signings and value them according to what they do on the ice, not necessarily what their efficiency level is from a cap standpoint. So he's going to make those decisions, and Travis next year has to deploy players based on the same decisions. So that's a tough place to be in.
There's a concept I've been thinking about a lot, gentlemen, and I'm actually interested in hearing both of you chime in as, you know, guys with 20 years of experience on this beat, right? Because as I look ahead to this offseason, as I look ahead to where the Canucks are at, what I can't shake is a sense that we talk about this team in traditional ways, but the cost that they're actually incurring is an opportunity cost in terms of this offseason, right? Like, if you have cap flexibility this summer, there are tremendous and unique opportunities available to you, like extraordinary opportunities for you. And the Canucks just aren't positioned to do that. They weren't positioned to do that last season, when they had also Sven Berchi and Brandon Sutter on the books, right? The most expensive AHL player and the most expensive taxi squad player on their roster last year. You know, not a huge surprise considering that your club ends up struggling. How do you cover something ephemeral, right? Like, something that hockey fans aren't actually used to processing, like the concept of missed opportunities when discussing this sport and this team? Like, how do you do it right? I don't actually have the answer. I'm just curious to see how you guys think about this.
Well, like, I'm not sure I have the answer as well, because you're right. Like, the opportunities were last year and this year, and Benning alluded to that in his radio interview this week, that, you know, there's going to be players come available this year because of the expansion draft and because of the cap, but they're not positioned to do it. And I'm just, nothing has happened to this point in this particular GM's tenure to show me that he's got the savvy to make the moves necessary to take advantage of that opportunity cost, right? You know, we've talked about the JT Miller trade from a couple of seasons ago, and the fact that he had the season he had a year ago justified what probably wasn't the right thing to do in terms of opportunity available based on what the Lightning were dealing with in that moment. And so I just don't know whether or not Jim's got the savvy to extricate himself from the current situation on his roster to take advantage of some of those opportunities that are going to be available, right? And, like, can you see it, Jeff, right? Can you see a way out of the current situation? You guys have broken down the potential buyouts, what Braden Holtby would actually mean, not to this year's cap, but to next year's cap if you wound up doing it this year. What any of these moves would make right now, what kind of sense they would make. They don't make a lot of sense. They don't really have a lot of viable exit strategies, do they? I mean, outside of Jake Virtanen, is there a viable exit strategy on this roster?
Well, we know that when they've had money to play with, they haven't spent it wisely. My hope, and maybe it's pie in the sky, my hope is that knowing the feeling in the marketplace, recognizing the stakes for Jim, that his job probably is on the line based on this coming season. If they miss the playoffs again, I just can't imagine that even this ownership group would bring him back. So the hope would be that knowing the stakes as high as they are, that they can be laser focused. And maybe that's asking too much based on the track record. But again, when they've had this sort of wide berth of money to play with, they haven't spent it wisely. I'm hoping that the fact that their hands are tied a little bit will force them to be nimble and show some real finesse. And, you know, we heard Jim again on the radio talking about buyouts. And he's a guy who, you know, over his time here, you kind of pick up on clues and trends when he talks. And he has repeatedly, openly talked about buyouts. So I have to believe that the Virtanen one certainly, and, you know, maybe they have their eyes on at least one other. And then beyond that, you know, he talked about the trade route again. We'll see where all of that goes, but the stakes are high and he knows it. So let's see what he does with, you know, some real heat on him here in an off season. But, you know, you can't make up for the past now. You just hope, that not just Jim, but the front office, and now he's adding the Sedins as a sounding board. Like, you hope that they have learned from past mistakes. They have watched what's gone on around them. And the other thing, too, and back to Farhan's point earlier about making the playoffs next year, you know, it may not be that difficult when we talk about this watered-down Pacific Division with an expansion team, the California teams, you got Calgary and Edmonton, they've got their warts, and even Vegas. After watching Vegas get outplayed by Montreal, I'm starting to think that we all had it wrong all along about, you know, this question of how strong was the Canadian division this year. Vegas went 8-0 against San Jose, 7-1 against Anaheim, 6-2 against both Los Angeles and Arizona, 27-5 against those four non-playoff teams. So maybe Vegas wasn't as good as we thought they were just because of their inflated point total.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fair. It's all fair. And like I said, my big thing with the buyouts is, other than Jake, everything else will affect them negatively the following year, like in big numbers. And that's really where the window is. Thomas, you've talked about that many times. That's where the window is. And you might get better deals this year, but it'll prevent you from doing business next year. And you're right. It might not take that much right now for them to get in when you look at what that division is going to look like. So it might just be nibbling around the edges to get into the playoffs if that's the goal. But let's not make more big mistakes that you've got to clean up and you've shown you can't clean them up.
Well, I've long maintained that, you know, if you could move Louis' contract, fine. If you have to bite the bullet and just have him play in Abbotsford or wherever. But buying out Louis, like 6 years of Louis, the last thing that this fan base would tolerate would be buying him out and pushing some of that dead money, a seventh year of Louis on the books.
Yeah.
Can't have it. Just this market cannot and won't accept that.
Well, and buying out Holtby is like extending longer recapture, right? Like it's another $2 million on your books. Like it's that $3 million comes off and you've got $2 million on for a guy you signed 9 months ago. You know, like it's really hard to fathom. Can I push back one? I want to float one more to both of you. And excuse me for hijacking this, JPAT. But it's our 200th episode, right? I'll cry if I want to. Those are the rules.
Why stop now?
Yeah, exactly. Now? I want to drill down on the weak Pacific Division thing because I don't buy it. I don't really buy it. Like, I think Vegas is good. I think Vegas is legitimately good because they beat the Avs, and the Avs are incredible. I think Vegas is legit. You know, gentlemen, that I think Calgary will bounce back, although I'm not exactly sure what that roster will look like. I still think that team's got really good depth, really good bones, and I don't think Markstrom's going to have 2 years like that, especially so long as they just don't overuse him the way they did this past season. Edmonton, we know what Edmonton is. They're not terrible, even though they got swept by Winnipeg. So now you're talking about one additional playoff spot. I think the Kraken are really good in year one. This is the flat cap era. They have 81.5 million in cap space. They have a limitless supply of the most valuable market asset or the most valuable commodity on the open market going into this weird offseason. And then I think LA still profiles like a team that can level up quick, right? Like that looks like a team that's going to improve really quickly all of a sudden, just as Vancouver did in 1920, right? That's my sort of take. I don't really buy that the Pacific Division is like a hall pass to the playoffs. And I want to hear you guys. Why are you so convinced that the Pacific will be weak? Because I actually think your attitude reflects an internal one for the Canucks.
Well, from my end, I've never been a big Calgary believer, right? I think that roster's got a lot of flaws. I actually thought they were going to get in simply because of Markstrom, right? And obviously he's going to level up. You're right. And I just don't expect the Canucks to be as bad as they were this year, right? I don't think that, you know, I don't think it's going to take a lot for them to get 10% better just internally. I mean, even if you bring in a Pod Colson and you make one or two, like I said, nibble around the edge type signings, I don't think they need massive reconstruction to just get in. Maybe I'm not giving LA the credit that you're giving them. And maybe I need to take another look at that. And again, I don't view it as a hall pass. I just think they're going to be in the mix down the stretch to get in and to be right there. So, you know, this team has a lot of improving to do just to get it, or sorry, to become an actual contender. I'm just looking at both of those metrics a little differently, contending versus getting into the playoffs.
And look, I get Vegas is a very good team, but they were exposed here in the Montreal series at the center ice position, and people wondered all season, you know, would that be a weakness? Obviously, their best players didn't step up and do enough. They're going to lose a couple of pieces to unrestricted free agency. They probably lose Marc-Andre Fleury somehow, and let's be honest, Robin Lehner is a bit of a wild card. He is. When he's on, he's a great goaltender, but there are issues that sometimes have you wondering where his head is. And so, look, Vegas is a good team. I just wanted to point out how they ran roughshod over those other teams that didn't make the playoffs, and I do think that's so. And Colorado was in that division. They did the same thing, so maybe their point totals were a little bit artificially inflated. LA's got this prospect pool that's a mile deep, and they're of those three California teams right now, they look like the team that is most likely, I think, to take a step. And Seattle, again, who knows, but Vegas showed what is possible. In fact, I was looking yesterday in Vegas's inaugural season, the Golden Knights finished 36 points ahead of the Canucks. That was Travis's first year. That was Travis's first year. Coming off the Willie D era, there was no expectations on Travis's team, and I don't think anybody truly expected that Vegas team to be that good, but they had 20 more wins and 36 more points than the Vancouver Canucks 4 years ago. So, you know, I just put that out there as sort of the bar of, you know, what's possible for an expansion team. And I think, you know, when we get closer to the season, you know, this question of, will the Canucks finish ahead of Seattle? And I think that's going to be a completely valid question, because I agree with you, Tom. In year one, like, Seattle's got the potential to put a team together that, and again, Vegas showed 4 years ago. I don't expect Seattle to make the run that they did in the playoffs, but I think Seattle has the potential. There's enough good goaltending available to them, and goaltending is obviously the backbone to any team. You know, I think Seattle will be able to put together a pretty credible team right off the bat, and given where the Canucks are right now, you know, I think that'll be a fascinating debate that certainly will rage in this market and hopefully in Seattle as well, as we try to build this rivalry in year number one.
I wonder if the rest of the league will allow Seattle to do what Vegas did. I know the rules are the same, but they went through it. These other 31 GMs went through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if it's going to be as easy for Seattle to execute the same blueprint. Yeah, the flat cap era is probably the wild card, because teams will be a little more desperate than they were when Vegas came in the front door, but they've kind of seen the methodology and might be more savvy to allowing it, as opposed to allowing it to happen to them again. But when I look at the potential list and, you know, the exercises that the guys at the Athletic have done on what all the expansion teams are going to, or what all the teams are going to leave on the expansion list, I mean, that defense that they signed could be really, really good at the front end. We'll see about the depth of scoring up front, but in terms of defense and goaltending, you're right, it's going to be a pretty good group. Their back end next year will be better than Vancouver's. When you look at what's available, their back end will absolutely be better than Vancouver's.
Well, let's finish up here then, because this is our first chance to visit with you since the Canucks made the one change behind the bench, and that was Newell Brown out And Bradshaw comes in as sort of this associate coach, at least, you know, in name. I don't think he's got the title, but it's pretty clear that he's coming in above the other assistant coaches. And this is a guy with this track record of years in the NHL working with defensemen. You know, you've all these years of coaching, Farhan. What about the psychology of the Canucks trying to bring in this sort of defensive guru to help not just Quinn Hughes, but you got Rathbone, and, you know, the hope from the organization standpoint is still that Olli Levy can turn out to be a player and a key piece of this group moving forward.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important that they bring in a guy with that kind of emphasis. I think it was important when Quinn Hughes had his last availability. He also talked about the fact that his biggest area he wants to improve is defensively. And that hadn't been the case, he admitted as much. I mean, he was always looking at different skill areas of his game as opposed to, you know, the defensive commitment and physically what's required to do that. So I think that's important that he's got that want to. And yeah, to bring in some coaching support on that end, I think matters. And it's not just defensemen, but it's defense generally, right? And I think he can also give something to what some of the forwards lack in that area, right? Because, I mean, we saw it wasn't just the defensemen that was the Canucks' problems in terms of how they played defense, but just their forwards' commitment, their inability to exit the zone effectively, the number of turnovers this team had. You know, there was just so much of that. You know, we've also talked about the Canucks' defensive structure, you know, under Travis Green. So I'm curious to see what the system is going to look like in terms of how they want to play defense with the current group they have next year, and if there's going to be any adjustments that he can bring to it, right? So I think, you know, on a few levels, not just in terms of Hughes and Rathbone. For me, I've pretty much seen all I want to see from Olli Levy. Like, I just don't think he's – I don't think he's a top three left-side defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks. That's, you know, I think Rathbone should be elevated above Olli Levy today, immediately. And I know they're going to do the training camp battles and all of that. But, yeah, to bring in a new voice and a new coach and maybe some new ideas – not just for the players, but for the coaching staff, I think is a positive thing. I think having a different voice, and Travis alluded to that earlier as well, it's a positive thing. And he's experienced. I think he's been around good defensive systems. And I think it's going to be a positive thing for how this team plays in its own end, because it's just not good enough right now.
Well, you never disappoint, Farhan. We were looking for a guest for our 200th episode, and you have delivered once again. So we thank you for the support over the years that we've been doing this and all of the shows. And we know that you listen when you're out there jogging. Are you running in this heat?
You know, I ran the last 2 days. I'm not running today. My son's got a hockey tournament, so I'll have to be navigating that a little bit. But listen, guys, honestly, you guys do a fantastic job. Yeah, I'm going to plug myself here, because Moj and I are going to we're developing a football podcast that we're going to be releasing at some point later this summer. So we're excited about that. But you guys have set the blueprint, because it's you guys that deliver. And, you know, and obviously from a business standpoint, Drancher and I were talking about it the other day, the market loves you guys. And so you guys are doing something right. And, you know, you carried me to my 10K run. So my first 10K in forever. So thanks for that, fellas. But honestly, you guys do a fantastic job. I can't believe it's been 200 episodes already. I shouldn't be surprised, because Drancher cranks out like 200 columns in 100 days.
I know.
So if anybody can do it, it's him and that work rate. So thanks for having me, guys. I'm honored to be a part of show 200.
Thanks, Farhan. You're the best.
Farhan Lal, GFTSN, joining us on the VanCast, as he's done throughout the last couple of years here. We always like having Farhan on. Great discussion about the Canucks, and looking forward to him adding a football podcast to the Vancouver market here as we work closer to both CFL and NFL season. Always fun to have Farhan on the program.
He is the best. And, you know, I love that he approaches his VanCast appearances so critically. You know, like, it's a good opportunity for him to maybe get a little bit more into the weeds than he can do on broadcast. He always takes it. He's just the best. Love the guy.
News of the day out of Seattle yesterday, of course, the Kraken finally introduced a head coach, Dave Hakstol, the former Flyer head coach, last couple of years working on the bench in Toronto. And Dave Hakstol is going to be the guest of Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on the Two-Man Advantage pod here at The Athletic next week. So you can look forward to that. And again, hoping that we're able to build up this rivalry, and we've all been waiting to see who'd be in charge. And, you know, a month from now, they'll have some semblance of, well, they'll have a roster. I won't say they'll have a lineup, because they'll certainly be moving pieces around once they go through the expansion process. But we'll start to get a clearer picture of, you know, what they've got to work with, at the very least, over the next month here by the end of July. Also, Tom, I just wanted to get a plug in for Corey Pronman did his mock draft at The Athletic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did the draft lottery and we talked about some of the players. And, of course, the Canucks have that ninth pick right now. Maybe being dangled, we'll see. But they're holding on to it for the time being. Corey's mock draft, and you can see this at The Athletic, had Owen Powers going first overall to Buffalo. Matt Beniers goes to Seattle second. Dylan Gunther of the Edmonton Oil Kings, the Western Hockey Leaguer. Corey's got him pegged to go third to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. The Canucks in this mock draft, they land the slippery fish.
Yeah.
They get Kent Johnson, the Port Moody kid out of Michigan.
Yeah, and I mean, Kent Johnson's one of the most unique players. Like, if you look at that top 10, you know, he might be the guy with the highest offensive ceiling in the group, right? And this just goes, like, the first mock draft we did had all the beat writers participating, and the Canucks got Mason McTavish, right? Corey Pronman's first iteration, the Canucks get Kent Johnson. We've got another one in the works that I can't spoil yet, but it's a different player than those two, and it's another player the Canucks fans are going to see and be like, what? They got him at ninth? And the industry will react the same way, too, because I made the pick and I always win the mock drafts. That's like what I do. But it's not me that wins the mock drafts. It's that ninth is such a good spot to be in because the separation, like, I think Gunther and Hughes underneath Beniers and Power have sort of separated themselves. But anyone from 5 to 9 could go in any order. You know what I mean? Like, it's very possible that the Canucks get the guy they rate 5th or 6th overall in this class at 9th. And that is awesome. Like, that means that you win the draft, basically, if you just don't overthink it and let the other teams overthink it and take whichever one of those 9 falls to you. So I'm going to keep winning mock drafts all the way through the month of July, so long as the Canucks keep the pick. And partly the Canucks should keep the pick because they're so well positioned to get a guy who they probably see as top 5 value, right? Kent Johnson, by the way, I had a good chat with him this week, and we'll be running some stuff at The Athletic, in advance of the draft. But in particular, he told a good story about, of course, he played it for the Trail Smoke Eaters for Jeff Tambellini, yeah. Right?
Right.
And, also a Port Moody kid, Jeff Tambellini. And I asked him, I just jokingly, flippantly asked him about, the back check, the epic Jeff Tambellini back check on, I think it was Martin Erat, right? And he was like, yeah, I brought it up to my teammates and no one believed that anyone could have a back check good enough to be a highlight. And we had to look it up and we look it up and it says on YouTube, Jeff Tambellini, the back check. And we were all laughing about it. And I was like, this is great. This is glorious. So yeah, I mean, Kent Johnson would be a great fit for Vancouver for a lot of reasons, but primarily it's because he might be the most offensively talented forward, pure offensively talented forward in this draft class. He's got the type of rare package that if the Canucks can get a player like that at 9, like, my goodness. You know, I like a lot of other prospects in this class too. I like Brant Clark. I like Edvinson. I like, you know, guys like Eklund and McTavish too. But Kent Johnson can do things with the puck on his stick that, like, very few people on this planet can. And yeah, if you get a player like that at 9th overall, like, just don't overthink it. Make the pick and spend the next, you know, decade laughing to yourself.
I always like in mock drafts just to, you know, obviously you hone in on the Canucks. And then I like to see on either side of the Canucks, just sort of as a general framework of, you know, who goes the one pick before and one after. In Corey's mock draft, this version, Brant Clark, you mentioned him, he goes 8th to the Los Angeles Kings, and the goalie, Jesper Wallstedt, goes 10th to Ottawa. And of course, Wallstedt could be the wild card that, you know, kind of adds another layer. If the goalie goes before the Canucks, then that probably means two of the guys that they're looking at will be available to them. So we'll see how that happens. And Luke Hughes wound up going to Jersey. Surprise,
I think that's that's happening. At this point, unless the Ducks make the reach, Quinn will be the isolated brother.
Well, that's going to do it for episode 200. We have traveled a lot of ground over the last couple of seasons here on the VanCast. It's been a blast. We love and thank everybody for the support. We have fun doing the program. We always tell you at the end to check out our comments section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, you are missing out. Go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Tom, 200.
200. Well done. In the books. Well done, JPAT. Congratulations to you.
And again, thanks to all the VIPs. That's why we do it. You're the ones that
slogged through the pandemic with us. Did almost daily episodes in the bubble. Like, thank you guys. It's unbelievable the support we get from you. Thank you.
Completely. For Tom, it's J-Pat. Thanks so much. You've been listening to another edition of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.